Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We are still learning about the enormity of the storm that hit Iowa on August 10th. The National Weather Service is calling this storm unprecedented. And we know, though, that according to a report from CBS 2 Iowa, winds in the Linn County and Cedar Rapids area were likely in excess of 100 miles per hour for nearly an hour. After the storm hit, it took a while for news of how bad the damage is in Linn County to trickle out. Almost no one had power, and the communications network was knocked out. The people who cover the news in Cedar Rapids and the surrounding area were in the same boat as everyone around them, but they left their damaged and powerless homes to go out to do their best to bring vital, and in some cases, life-saving information to their neighbors. Two local television stations were knocked off the air, but reporters did their best to get the news out via social media. And somehow, through sheer force of will, the Cedar Rapids Gazette managed to get a paper out Tuesday morning. They've continued to cover the crisis and recovery thoroughly ever since. And this hour, I'm going to talk with people from the Gazette, and Beth Malicki of KCRG TV9 will also be here. But I just want to take a moment right now to recognize the essential work being done by local journalists with every other outlet in eastern Iowa and across the state as well. Without local journalists and local news organizations, these stories would not be getting told. Liz Lenz is a columnist for the Cedar Rapids Gazette. She has not just been reporting on what's going on in Iowa and Cedar Rapids, but using her enormous Twitter following to get help for those in the area and to get word of what happened in Iowa to people outside the state, including publishing a column in the Washington Post. Liz Lenz is on the line now. Hello, Liz.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you so much for being here today. And Michaela Ram is also here with us, healthcare reporter for the Gazette. Hello, Michaela.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
And Andy Abeda, photojournalist with the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Hi, Andy.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. Thank you all so much for being here today. And Andy, I want to start with you because your reporting on the storm started almost immediately. You were actually out on I-380 driving when this storm hit.
Yeah, I was on my way back from Iowa City and was actually running out of gas. So I didn't stop and kept going until I eventually saw a semi-truck tipped over on the side, driving southbound on the northbound lanes. And no one was out to help the driver yet. I stopped right away and ran back by the time I'd gotten there. Luckily, two other people had gotten there, including a nurse. I was able to call 911 as they began to help the guy get out. And I ended up getting just a few photos on my phone and video and kind of in shock of what was happening and ran back to my car to take shelter as the driver, I should say, was appeared to be fine, and the nurse checked him out, took him to her car, and that was kind of it. But that was my start to the storm.
Well, and did you, of course, as a photographer, I'm sure immediately you were thinking about, you know, how can I capture this experience in pictures? But also, I mean, you were getting hammered by the storm. How did you get through it?
Yeah, it's a weird kind of combination. I'm always thinking about photos, whether I'm working or not. But in that, I mean, my cameras were sitting in the passenger seat. But in that moment, you're just a human first. Any journalist, I think, would be. I ran back. I didn't grab my cameras or anything. I ran back to see if the guy was okay. And once I realized there were two men helping him get through the windshield, breaking the windshield off the truck. And then the one woman that was a nurse was ready to help him out, check him out. So at that point, I was more in the way than anything. So I kind of stepped back and realized I had my phone in my pocket and at least made a few photos that way. So that's kind of the order of things in my head. But yeah, the storm was coming down very hard right there. At one point, I mean, I'm running on the side of the interstate there, and I thought I was going to get blown over. Quite literally from the wind and the hail. Certainly didn't feel good. I think we all kind of came back to once we saw the driver was all right and like, okay, we should go shelter in our cars now. So it was quite the experience.
And did you just remain in your vehicle on 380 for the duration? I mean, this went on, as I was just saying, for a long time.
Yeah, I sat in my vehicle and winds were, you know, coming from the east. So I faced my back, you know, I have my driver's side window and I faced my back to my window and kind of ducked down for fear that, you know, something might blow through my window. And when the storm started to die down, I kept driving and actually found a second semi and approached, parked, and got out. Now the storm's mostly passed over, and that driver was stuck in his vehicle as well. And two men beat me to it, and exact same procedure. They broke the windshield out and got him out. He also looked to be fine. And then I just kept driving, and I think in maybe a 5 mile span, I think there were 7 or 8 tractor trailers that I saw tipped over. It was quite the scene.
Yeah, terrifying. Liz, where were you when the storm hit?
I was at home with my kids and dog and cat. My cat was out in the storm. He's fine. Waffles is fine. But I was at home with my kids, and I had heard that a thunderstorm was coming. And I was rushing, you know, to meet a deadline, and the alarms went off, and so my kids are very safety conscious and immediately rushed down to the basement, but they were upset because they didn't know where Waffles was. So I came upstairs to kind of peek outside, see if I could find the cat, and I am from Texas, you know, I grew up in tornado country. And so I was just kind of thinking, oh, it's just like a thunderstorm, it'll be fine. And I was looking out my window and, you know, I started hearing, the first thing I saw was a tree just fall over onto my neighbor's car. And then I, you know, was hearing the snap, thump over and over. And then I hear it hit my house.
Oh.
And then all of a sudden now I can't see because there's, you know, I initially thought it was the whole tree. Thank God it was only just part of it come down in my house, and then, you know, ran down to the basement. And that's when I was like, this is real, and ran down to the basement, you know, to hold my kids and then and kind of ride this out. I think something that Andy brings up so perfectly is how we've been covering this storm while we're both the subjects and the chroniclers of it, you know, so that makes it additionally hard. Like this last weekend, I was doing interviews over the phone while scrubbing my underwear in a plastic tub in my neighbor's front yard. You know, Andy was doing it while being an amazing human and trying to save people's lives. And we've all, you know, we've all had like trees through our roofs, and many of us are still without power. And so, it's added this very interesting layer of difficulty.
Yeah, for sure.
To the whole experience.
Michaela, tell me about your storm experience.
Yeah, so I live in Iowa City, and quite frankly, we're fine where I'm at on the west side. We never lost power. And, you know, I had kind of been hearing from my colleagues in Cedar Rapids as the storm was hitting that their internet and their power was going out. So my main concern was just scrambling to get a story written that I had been working on and get it into the server before my phone power went out. But we were lucky. We never lost any of that. And, you know, I just had a couple of damaged branches on my tree, but never the level of damage that some of my colleagues at the Gazette. So I really have to give them kudos. You know, they're not only out there working their butts off trying to get the stories out and getting these photos out, but they're all doing it while dealing with their own personal trauma from the storm and trying to grapple with what their own recovery while reporting on everyone else's recovery.
Well, and the Gazette in Cedar Rapids, of course, everybody's been working from home because of COVID-19. So you were probably all spread out, but the Gazette headquarters in Cedar Rapids lost power. Liz, I'm still in awe that you guys managed to get a paper out on Tuesday. How did you do that?
Well, it wasn't me. What happened was, our editors, our executive editors, they immediately put in place a plan where they got us out to our printer. Another complicated factor is that our downtown building, we're moving out of it to save some money, and we're going to consolidate some buildings, because we can't forget that we're also in a pandemic, which has hit independent news outlets particularly hard. And, you know, we're one of them, and, you know, we're so lucky to have community support, and we've been doing better than a lot of places. But, you know, that was a complicating factor. So, what happened was, I think there was still internet at our Iowa City offices, so some people were going there. Other people were putting their stories on flash drives and bringing it to the printing offices in Cedar Rapids, where there was a generator, and literally just plugging in the stories to the server. And, you know, I've got to talk to my colleagues about this, and it was just incredible. The designers are writing out, you know, story budgets on pieces of paper and taping them to the walls, and editors are driving in flash drives from Iowa City. I had to email in my story and my column and have somebody else put it in for me, because I had to drive up to Cedar Falls with my kids. Because another factor is, like, I have my kids and I'm a single mom, so I couldn't bring them to the printers. So I had to just drive up to Cedar Falls. Like, okay, guys, like, once our driveway was cleared, I was like, get in the car, grab the dog. We got to go. We got to meet a deadline. And you know, they not only did they put out one paper on Tuesday, they put out two papers on Tuesday. And they were still delivered. When people still weren't getting mail, they still got their newspaper on the front door. I remember coming out or coming home, because I had to stay in the hotel that night, and coming home and laughing to see my whole yard just covered in tree branches. It's like I have to, like, climb over everything to get into my front door, but there on my front step is the newspaper, like, wrapped up neatly and placed gently. And I think it was one of those last cry moments where I was like, I'm so proud to be part of this team, and, you know, what they did to get news out to people. Because when internet's down, when phones are down, when people can't use anything, to have that piece of paper on your front doorstep telling you what's going on in your city.
They somehow managed to not miss a day of bringing out a newspaper. And as Liz was just telling us a few minutes ago, they brought out two papers on Tuesday, the day after the storm, even though the county was just ravaged by this storm. I want to bring somebody else into the conversation now as well. Beth Malicki is a news anchor with KCRG TV9, one of the television stations that was knocked off the air by this terrible storm. She has also been raising her voice to make sure that Iowa stories are being told, not just here in Iowa, but around the country as well. Beth, hello.
Good morning, Charity. What a pleasure to be talking with you. I'm a huge fan.
Oh, well, thank you so much for being here. And it's mutual. Beth, tell me your storm story. I already heard from Andy, Liz, and Michaela how they got through the storm. Where were you?
I was at home with my middle child and my husband, and my son and I. He's 16, and he's practicing to get his driver's license. So when the outdoor warning sirens went off, we were almost home, and I thought, wow, this thunderstorm is no joke. Because like everybody else, it came out as a thunderstorm warning. Went home, hopped on Twitter, turned on KCRG, and we were wall-to-wall, and Twitter was like, oh my goodness, these winds in Ames and Des Moines are crazy, and they're coming toward you, take cover. And then we lost power pretty quickly after that, headed downstairs. In the beginning, it was like, wow, this is really bad, because we live in a valley and we rarely get strong winds. And we have huge trees around us. We live in the woods. And the winds were blowing these huge trees back and forth in a way I'd never seen. So what I do, I grab my phone, I record it, because that's what journalists do. And then my husband's like, the trees are falling. So we could see out windows through our basement because there are different elements of our basement. Then we hoofed it to the part of the basement with no windows, which frankly is where we should have been the whole time.
Right.
And we could hear, like Liz Lenz just described, crack, then thud. And we heard it on our home, and our house shook twice. But we had no idea what that meant. How bad was it going to be when we emerged? And we kept thinking, this has to be dying down soon. This has to be dying down soon, and it just wouldn't. And I don't want to get too much in the specifics about where my oldest child was, because I think I'll lose it. But he was out in it, and it was very frightening. I couldn't get a hold of him.
Oh.
He's totally fine. I just think so many of us have a little bit of PTSD right now.
Yeah.
And then my daughter was in Marion, and she was with a friend, and I know this family well. They're beautiful. They're wonderful. I know they'd be responsible and head of the basement. But my son was in his car, and he left a message that I still won't listen to, saying he loves us and he's going to be okay.
Wow.
Sorry.
No. So, Beth, obviously, again, you're going through this incredible experience as a human first, because we all are. KCRG got knocked off the air, and that really, a television station with no television station is not very good at delivering the news. So how did you and your coworkers try to approach getting the word out?
You know, just like my friends at the Gazette described, you know, after we knew everybody was okay and safe, my son was fine. He was abandoned his car and walked a couple miles home. And he is 19, so it's not like he's a little guy. And, I mean, I just said to my husband, I got to go. I got to get in there. I can't contact the station. They can't contact me. I have no cell service. Our power's obviously out. So I packed a backpack, grabbed an umbrella because it was still raining, and crawled through my driveway because there were so many trees in my driveway. And on our road, you couldn't get through without like Katniss Everdeen, you know, going through the woods to maneuver your way. And my co-anchor Chris Earle picked me up, and he had a heck of a time getting to me because so many roads were blocked off by downed trees and downed power poles. He finally was able to get me. It's usually about 11 minutes to the station for me. It took 2.5 hours. And we had to go through all of these areas to find passable routes. And that gave us the opportunity to see more damage than just our little world. And that was powerful and helped inform our reporting when we got to the station finally. But we recognized we're not on the air, we're not on MediaCom, and we're not on our satellite providers because it all was damaged. Our building was damaged. We had water pouring into our lobby because our third floor had issues. But it's what you would do, Charity. It's what we all do. You just do it. You just go on the air, and then you try to find ways that people are getting communication. And some people did have cell service. So whatever we were doing on the air, we were duplicating online.
And it took a while. I am also down in Iowa City. Of course, we got hit by the storm. We lost power at the radio station, but we were back on by the next day. And Michaela, since you were kind of from the outside looking in on Cedar Rapids, I know that for a lot of people outside of Cedar Rapids, it took a long time to really start to understand the depth of the devastation and the damage there. Michaela, do you have a recollection of when it really dawned on you that Cedar Rapids and Linn County experienced something so much worse than the terrible storm, which was terrible everywhere, that so many others experienced?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, to be honest with you, I think it still kind of is slowly sinking in for me. On Tuesday, I was sent out to Benton County to try to cover the damage that was out there in these small towns like Blairstown, and try to kind of find out. And just driving down 30, I saw that parts of the road were still blocked by downed power lines. And trying to get to these small towns around Benton County, it was like people were just nonchalantly driving over downed power lines and sort of trying to navigate their way around these downed branches. And just, you know, it kind of struck me at that point that, like, wow, okay, so obviously it was widespread if we still haven't really addressed some of these blocked roadways. But, you know, and talking to people's homes with tree branches punched through their roofs, and, you know, they still kind of, you know, oh, I consider myself lucky. It's not as bad as Cedar Rapids. And so when I did manage to find my way into Cedar Rapids and try to drive my way through, it just, I mean, it's astounding, the level of devastation. And, you know, I think, I don't know why it's really kind of taken so long to sort of have a broader acknowledgement of why and how broad this devastation was and how bad this was. But I do really have to credit people like Liz and Beth for really using their platforms to try to get this information out there. Because I think for some of us, even in Eastern Iowa, it took a little bit of time to sink in just how bad the storm was.
Well, and a lot of people were without power, so a lot of people were not able to consume media the way that they normally would. So even if the information was out there, I think a lot of people weren't seeing it. But also, when your house has been struck by a tree and you've lost power no matter where you are, it's maybe a little hard to see past what's going on outside your front door. Liz, do you know when you had kind of a realization that, wait, this story isn't getting out?
Like Beth, I had to leave. I was like, I have to do my job, and that requires me getting out of town. And I remember driving out of town with my kids and my puppy in the car and seeing billboards bent in half and seeing Tires Plus completely demolished. And I started crying. And, you know, my kids are small, so I try to usually keep it together for them. But this is the third major natural disaster that Cedar Rapids has experienced in 12 years. I've been here for every single one of them, mucked out houses, as all my colleagues have, you know, and saved bookstores and did everything. And just to see it get hit again, as I was driving out, I was like, this is really, really bad. And the first thing I wrote was how bad this is. And I remember, I think it was Tuesday morning, because I had been able to kind of like Katniss and everything, kind of get out of town a little bit. But I remember coming back and just being like, why, feeling like I was in this, in a whole different world than the rest of my friends, you know, trying to talk to my family. And my mom called, she's like, oh, did you get your power back? And I was like, no, Ellen, like, I'm not gonna get power. And I think it was about Tuesday morning when I would go online and I would see what people were talking about. And then I would look out at my city and see what we were experiencing. And that cognitive dissonance was really hard for me. I think, like Beth said, like, there's a little bit of PTSD, you know, in the absolute immense tragedy, not just to our landscape, but to the people, you know, the people who had to go live in seniors' homes and go 5 days without power, you know, or the woman who calls me because she can find my name in the paper but can't get through to anybody else to say she hasn't had a hot meal in 4 days. You know, and I think, like, hearing that and then looking online and seeing people talk about Joyce Carol Oates' foot, which was a Twitter thing, you know, at some moment, it made me want to scream. And not because I think people are not caring. I think people are fundamentally caring. They just didn't know. And I had seen Beth tweet something, and I often freelance for other places. And so I immediately started emailing some of my contacts and said, I need to write about this. And the post was so great. The woman was like, well, you know, we did do a story on the crops. And I was like, forget the crops. This is different. And I had to, like, use a little bit of my cash because I've written for them before. So I had to say, please just trust me. Please just trust me. When I turn this in, you're going to understand. And I was able to use, you know, stories from my Gazette colleagues. I was able to use Beth's advocacy and put it all there in the op-ed. And then when I turned it in, you know, the editor being like, oh, you were right. Like, oh, you were absolutely right. And you know, and to their credit, I was like, and now get it up online as fast as you can, which, if anybody freelances or writes, you know, that's not really a request you can usually make, but you're usually at their mercy. And so they were really good about, you know, getting it up. And then the moment it got up, people responded. And I will say, you know, we were able to, at the paper, put together a list of places that needed donations. We've raised so much money for Meals on Wheels. We've cleaned off the Eastern Iowa Diaper Bank Amazon wish list. And, you know, I know other places have just received this huge outpouring of support, which has been really, really, really great.
Yeah. Beth, you, as Liz just mentioned, I mean, you raised your voice on Twitter very early on and said, this is not getting national news coverage. This is a story that needs to be told. What pushed you to do that? Because that's a pretty unusual thing for someone in your position to do.
Yeah, I was standing in my kitchen and looking out at what it was unrecognizable, and it still is obviously, and will be for gosh forever, my neighborhood. And I just, to Liz's point, it seemed like nobody knew this was happening, like nobody. And I was thinking back to the flood of 2008 in Cedar Rapids, and we led every national newscast that evening, ABC, CBS, NBC. We had the Weather Channel, almost there are people putting themselves in danger, walking around in floodwater and waders. You couldn't go downtown without tripping over a live truck wire. And I was like, where's our elevation of this story? Because after the flood of 2008, FEMA, a communications crew, came through and they talked to myself and Bruce Downey, my co-anchor at the time, and were curious about the response. And I will never forget what one of the FEMA representatives said to me. He said, keep telling the story, but be sure to show the flood video, because every time they see how bad it is, you get more help. And at the time I was like, it's not really my role to advocate to get help. That's right. Not what I do. I'm a journalist. I just advocate for the truth. So what I felt like I could do was, I'm standing in my kitchen feeling this overwhelmed feeling of no one's going to help us because no one knows. I thought, I'm just going to share what I am seeing. I'm not tagging certain entities. I'm not being cruel and calling them out and saying, why don't you notice us? I'm just stating what I'm seeing and comparing it to the flood of 2008. And I wish I could tell you I gave a lot of reflection and like checked it out and spent a lot of time. I probably banged out that tweet in like 4 minutes tops, because my middle son was like, Mom, I want to eat. What can we eat? I'm like, eat nothing in the fridge. It all has to go in the trash. I mean, I still don't have power today. I'm talking to you from the Sam's parking lot because I didn't have enough power on my phone.
Wow. Well,
and I'll say, too, we're also coming off of the caucus season where the almond milk in our state was overly scrutinized, right? And so we're coming off of a season where everything about Iowa was just over-scrutinized and almost overwritten about. And now months later, you know, everybody's like, oh, I'm sorry, did your crops fall over? You know, and again, I know people aren't cruel, and it's been a year of overwhelming tragedy on every level. But like Beth said, you know, we're when people see the stories, they get help. And because this is our friends and our neighbors who are suffering, we deeply, deeply just wanted help for everyone.
I have an email from Stephanie in Cedar Rapids. She said she wants to thank Beth for her tireless efforts this past week and how she's gotten information out when it's so desperately needed. We relied on her and Bruce during the 2008 flood, and seeing her post during this latest disaster has given us a sense of security and consistency that is otherwise absent for too many of us. I don't know what sort of municipal accolades Cedar Rapids and surrounding towns get out, but whatever they are, Beth deserves all of them. And I saw someone suggesting that the Cedar Rapids Gazette needs a Pulitzer for its coverage, which I think is actually not outside the realm of possibility. But we will continue this conversation in just a couple of minutes. We're going to take a break here in a moment, and you are welcome to join the conversation. If you are in Cedar Rapids or the surrounding area, if you have stories that you feel aren't getting told, we'd love to hear about them. Or if you have comments you'd like to share with us, you can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before we get to that break, Andy, as a photographer, this storm is so amazing visually, but also because there are so many trees down, I think maybe it was possibly a little bit hard to start to tell that story visually. Was that a challenge for you to try to get photos that would actually help illustrate what happened?
Yeah, that's actually a really big challenges is we all get focused on these giant trees down and this damage to this building or, you know, landmarks around town. And everyone wants to feed you that information. And at a certain point, you have to just start ignoring your whether that's your friends, coworkers, whoever. And like, no, I need to find the people and the human effect. I mean, I've photographed a wide range of just people, Alliant crews that live in Cedar Rapids and don't have power but are restoring power.
Yeah, and so we'll talk more about some of those people that you've been able to bring us photos of in a moment.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
Beth Malicki of KCRG TV9 is here. And Andy, just before the break, I asked you to start telling us about how you have been capturing this storm through photographs. It's clearly not enough to take pictures of downed trees. You've been trying to tell the human story of the losses with this storm. Tell me about some of the things that you've been able to photograph that has been powerful for you.
Yeah, it's really just, I didn't live in Cedar Rapids for the flood of 08, but you always hear when you meet people about the way that this community comes together. And to witness that so plainly in front of me is incredible. And I've seen everything. I was doing a story with one of our reporters, Allison, who was working on a story about people relying on medical devices they can't, you know, use without electricity. And that led me to a man, Jeff, who uses a CPAP machine and can't right now. So he hasn't slept at all. But he's a retired chef. So he was grilling all of the food he had in his freezer for all of his neighbors, for Alliant crews going by, city workers, anyone, and just doing anything he could despite his situation. And volunteers showed up to help him clear out his front yard of a tree down while I was there. And it's just literally people on top of each other, you know, helping on different levels. And that's everywhere. It's been really incredible to see. And I mentioned the Alliant crews they don't have power themselves, but they're working 18-hour days and just try to put a face to that, because it's one thing to say it, it's another thing to show it and show you that community member doing that thing.
Well, and you've, just as you told us earlier, from the very first moments of the storm, you were trying to help other people, but you also witnessed so many people helping other people. That's been one of the major stories of this storm recovery, is people volunteering and people trying to get supplies to others and just trying to do what they could do. But at the same time, a lot of that has been done in the absence of, at least in those early days, a really organized relief effort. Andy, has that been something you've been trying to capture as well?
Yeah, it's been a grassroots effort, but it's also, you know, seeing neighbors with picnic tables and just putting up, you know, things that them and their friends had donated for their neighborhood, but also to see organizations like the Hawkeye Area Community Action Program come together, and they had, with the help from Hy-Vee, had thousands of meals given out just a few days ago at Vets Memorial Stadium. I teared up a little bit watching the just thousands and thousands of meals going out to families. And you had people pulling up in trucks saying, hey, I'm feeding my whole neighborhood. And they throw, you know, boxes of food in and fill up the back of a truck or fill up a minivan because that person had a car and could get it there to get food to their neighbors. So it's just been on every level, people helping each other.
Michaela, 2020 was already a really intense year to be a healthcare reporter. So now in addition to a pandemic, and that's also a big part of this story as well. We'll probably find out in the next couple of weeks if COVID-19 is going to be the part of the cruel aftermath of this story. But what have your priorities been as a healthcare reporter?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, just to comment on COVID-19, you know, it's been really interesting to kind of see how the pandemic has sort of taken a back seat to this response to this disaster. And I mean, I will say there are a lot of people wearing masks while they're handing out food, and there are a lot of, you know, hand sanitizer stations around. But I will say that, you know, certain mitigation policies and, you know, kind of the concern that there could be an outbreak in 2 weeks may have contributed to sort of the response that we have seen. You know, I've been hearing from these grassroots efforts that sort of a general frustration at how slow things were to respond. And I think a lot of that has to do with these individuals and these organizations wanting to be careful around the pandemic, too, because they do remember that the virus is still out there. But yeah, as a healthcare reporter, you know, my main priority initially, you know, when I heard that, you know, Cedar Rapids was out of power, I reached out to the hospitals. You know, they have backup generators and were able to stay open. But the outlying clinics, the urgent cares, family practice physicians, they all had to close. And so the hospitals sort of saw this overwhelming surges in their emergency rooms, not as a direct effect of the storm, but, you know, as cleanup was underway, as you know, as Andy said, people with medical devices didn't have power. They were sort of showing up out of desperation. And so I think going forward as a healthcare reporter, I will be really watching closely how these populations, you know, who are medically fragile really kind of cope with this, because I mean, insulin needs refrigeration in order for you to take it. People with CPAP machines, things like that. I think it will be a long road to recover for those individuals, but for everyone in general. But, you know, I agree. I think the pandemic will certainly kind of rear its ugly head here again soon, unfortunately.
We have this question from Ogden in Iowa City. I've heard constant complaints online and from other people saying that Iowa's derecho hasn't garnered the national news coverage it deserves, especially last night during the DNC when CNN cut to a commercial during the Iowa roll call. Do you think that there has been an adequate amount of national news coverage to truly inform? And does the amount of coverage a national or natural disaster gets impact relief efforts from the federal government or other organizations such as the Red Cross or FEMA? There are a lot of questions included in that. Liz, I'm going to go to you first. I mean, you, as I mentioned, you and Beth have both raised your voices. You've both been very present now in national media. This story has been getting told on network news and in national, well, newspapers that get read nationally, I should say, in both the Washington Post and the New York Times. Do you feel like there's been enough coverage at this point, Liz?
No, I don't, because here's the problem with the storm. The storm was more than just the winds. The real devastation of the storm were the people who didn't get help fast enough. You know, it's our immigrant population who's living in tents on the southwest side of town. It's the people in the senior living centers who, again, went for days without power, without hot food. You know, it's the couple that I met who had their apartment blown off around them while they struggled and waited on the curb for the Red Cross for 4 days, you know, because they were told help would come and then help never came. And now all of this is happening in the backdrop of an unchecked pandemic where a state without without a mask ordinance and Linn County, where the eye of the storm was, you know, was already a COVID hotspot. So, you know, it is distressing to me that it takes an op-ed in the Washington Post to get people motivated to help. And, you know, famously, the president was here the other day. He signed disaster relief, but it wasn't nearly what we needed. It wasn't nearly what we asked for. And so we're still struggling here on the ground to get the reality of the devastation, that story told. And that's going to be a struggle as we continue.
Well, and I want to point out for people who may not have a nuanced understanding of journalism, Liz, you are a columnist, as Beth was saying earlier, as a news anchor. It is her role to get the truth of a story out there, not to advocate for people. So this has put her in kind of a strange situation. As a columnist, Liz, you do get to advocate for people, and your voice has been very strong on that as well. But I do want to, Beth, get your take on it. Again, as I mentioned, the story has been being told on news networks. You have been on national news sharing this story. Do you feel like it's gotten enough coverage?
Absolutely not. And the coverage came too late.
I'm so grateful for every sliver of mention, of video, of writing, of photos that we get today beyond our immediate area. But it came so late that people were truly suffering. Last night, people are still sending me messages asking, can you please have somebody come to this apartment complex? There's a bunch of seniors and disabled people, and they too haven't been getting help, and they still don't have power. And I'm like, why am I the conduit? I should never be the conduit. So what can I do? We can just do a story on it. We are limited in a way, and it is immoral how the response has not met the need. And I don't mean to be critical of entities in particular. I mean overall, that the humanitarian crisis that's happening on the ground, we're what, at day 10, day 11? I don't even know anymore. It's still not being met. There's so many people who are doing the right thing and trying to help, and oh my goodness, thank you. But the reality is, without a FEMA disaster declaration for individual assistance, essential function number 6 under the FEMA guidelines, it's called mass care. It's where they set up these ability to connect volunteers with the needy, to address the humanitarian issue on the ground around shelter, around food, around medical devices that need to be powered or kept cold. Many groups are doing that right now, but it's not getting to our most vulnerable 100% of them, not even 90% or 80%, if I had to hazard a guess.
Well, and it's not been very systematic either, with so many people doing their best to deliver aid. It's been a little scattered shot. I mean, people are going where they can see the need, but that doesn't mean that there's been a really systematic exploration of where the need is and who really needs what. And Beth, you were covering the president's visit yesterday. I know that Iowa leaders and Cedar Rapids leaders and Marion, the mayor of Marion, was also there, made the case for further disaster declaration approval. Do you feel like the needs have been heard at the federal level?
I think it's always a big deal when the chief executive officer of the United States of America comes to a community and hears directly from people impacted by any disaster. And so the fact that they got to look him in the eye and talk to President Trump about what was happening, nobody can diminish that that can have an impact, no matter how you feel about the people in the room. And the president said he would get it done. He said it repeatedly. Cedar Rapids Mayor Brad Hart made the case about individual assistance, as did Mayor Abouassali. And Kim Reams with Mission of Hope, a nonprofit here in Cedar Rapids that is faith-based and works with people who are homeless, near homeless, living in poverty. She spoke passionately about how those are the people who are not going to be okay because they don't have insurance. She herself lost her home in this disaster, but she said, I'm fine. I'm not going to have long-term effects of this because I have insurance, but those without insurance are not going to be fine.
We only have a few minutes left, and Beth was mentioning how she's been overwhelmed by people wanting their stories told. Michaela, is that an experience that you're also having? So many stories that could be told that you can't get to?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's so many moving pieces to this disaster and so many people impacted. I think there's just so much to cover sometimes. It's kind of hard. So I think what we've tried to do is try to prioritize the broad impact and sort of try to encompass as much as we can in our day-to-day reporting. But I have a feeling that this is just something we're going to be covering for a long time. I mean, like Andy said, I wasn't here during the 2008 flood, but when I moved here, it's something I heard commonly. And I have a feeling that this is something we're going to be reporting on, just the after effects and this long road to recovery. But yeah, it's been very difficult to reach all of those stories.
Liz, do you have anything you want to add about that? I'm sure that your phone has been ringing off the hook, and I know you shared your cell phone number because your office phone was non-operational, so I'm sure you're getting this 24 hours a day.
Yeah, I think, you know, like Beth, me in the newsroom, we've been getting people calling and saying, please help us, and, you know, as journalists, we are humans first, and so we are always going to be there to help people, but it is very disconcerting that people can't get through to the city, can't get through to the places that they need, that would normally organize the help. But I do, and so we're going to keep telling the story, we're going to keep being humans and journalists who are living in this disaster, but also reporting this disaster. But I wanna tell something about Beth. Is over the weekend I did some freelancing for the Post so they could get some of the human stories on the ground. And again, as a single mom, I had to throw my kids in the car, bring them out to Veterans Memorial Coliseum, and then Beth came over and picked up my kids and gave them lunch and played card games with them. And then I had to file a story on my cell phone sitting in her daughter's room with no power. And I think that's what we're all doing here. Like, we are a community. We're here for each other. And but also, you know, we're going to advocate for those who aren't being seen, because this disaster, like Michaela, like Andy, like everybody's been saying, this is not just one and done for us. This is going to have wide ranging impacts on our city for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, the marks of this storm are not going away. You've seen storm recovery from 2008, Beth. You've watched that up close and personal, but this storm has just changed the landscape in a way that a flood can't, hasn't it?
It has. The flood had a very specific path, the banks of the Cedar River, the banks of the Iowa River, and where they converged in Columbus Junction and other tributaries and such. This is everywhere. It is difficult to really describe and really accept how widespread the damage is, not just in Linn County. You know, 27 counties in Iowa are state disaster declaration areas, and that it's just such a different experience for people, because we haven't even been able to tell the stories yet about really businesses and their impact, daycares. We can't even come up for air right now. It's focused largely on the humanitarian piece because that's so critical. Those are lives at stake.
We are out of time, but thank you all so much for taking your time. I know you're all incredibly busy, both personally and professionally, to share your stories. And thank you so much for the work that you have been doing. Liz Lenz is a columnist for the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Michaela Ram, healthcare reporter. Andy Abeda, photojournalist with the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Beth Malicki, anchor with KCRG TV9. And if there's a story about this storm that you feel hasn't been told, please text STORM to 515-599-7477 to share your story with Iowa Public Radio. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe.